Hello, this is Lafayette Faust, creator of the Nevermore Hollows podcast. Thank you for making the show a success. Please take a moment to subscribe, give 5 stars, comment, and share the show with your friends. It's the best way to help us grow and to be able to continue to provide quality horror content. Also, please support our new art director, Chris Madman Goins at Black Sheep Studios TN on Instagram. He has some amazing Nevermore Hollows art for sale, signed by the both of us, as well as many other original pieces I think you're gonna love. Now, for you horror hounds who like to have a good laugh, I invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called The Three Uncool Cats. In it, my two friends and I sit in a basement and discuss music, movies, and whatever else comes into our warped minds. I would really appreciate it if you would give it a listen. Now, with that out of the way, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. Tonight, it gets dark. This will be the most disturbing story that I've told up to this point. It's about a deputy that was on a back road and came upon a scene that would force him to accept the reality of evil. It was a scene so disturbing, so twisted, that he quite nearly slipped into madness. If you are squeamish, turn back now. This story is not for you. Do not enter Nevermore Hollows. However, for those of you who choose to venture on, you've been warned. So, buckle up and prepare yourself. Tyler Dane had been a deputy for less than a year. He'd spent most of that time riding along with his training officer, writing tickets, breaking up the occasional fight at Morrison's biker bar, and working security at Hitchcock High School ball games. He'd heard rumors from some of the other deputies that Dunwich Forest, which almost completely encircled Nevermore Hollows, was haunted and that some really weird things happened in the area that Sheriff Mosley liked to keep quiet. The word was that these weird things were paranormal in nature. Tyler didn't really believe in any of that paranormal voodoo crap. He chalked those rumors up to good-natured ribbing to creep him out because he was the new guy and the youngest at only 24 and had only recently been given his own cruiser and was now, finally, on patrol. Anyway, Mosley was a straight shooter. Tyler liked him a lot and knew that he could learn a lot from him. If it was true that Mosley kept a dark secret, well, that was his business. All that Tyler wanted was to be the best cop that he could be. It was 1:45 a.m., Tyler's third night out on patrol by himself, and he had just turned off State Road 31 onto an old country road that wound deep into the countryside. The trees towered over the thin ribbon of road, blocking out light from the quarter moon that crept across the black sky above. The cruiser's headlights did little to illuminate the road ahead. It was almost as if the inky black shadows cast by the forest oppressed the beams, dimming them to near ineffectiveness. He knew that some of the deputies refused to patrol these lesser-traveled lanes. Some didn't want to because they were lazy. Others swore they'd seen glimpses of strange beasts in the forest lining the roads. Either way, Tyler was not afraid. He wouldn't let the lazy deputies or the chicken shit deputies stop him from doing what needed to be done. He was paid to patrol, and that he would do. He suspected that if he found anything, it would likely be some high school kids parked and making out. He might even get lucky and catch some drug runner using the back roads to stay off the state highway and off the trooper's radar. He rounded a lazy curve, and his high beams cast a hazy glow onto a small clearing to his right. He saw two creatures that at first resembled men, both approximately 6 feet tall, with massive biceps and powerful legs. But something wasn't quite right. Their skin glimmered a silky green, and their eyes were affixed to long, snake-like appendages that protruded from their heads. It was only a brief glimpse before they juked away from the lights and into the tree line. His skin prickled. It was too fast for him to really make out any detail, but he would have sworn they looked just like the two aliens he'd seen in a comic book at Romero's Comics and Games. The cop in him told him to slow down, get a closer look, see if there were a group of kids in costumes having a party in the woods somewhere. But the hair quivering on the back of his neck and the knot in the pit of his stomach told him to ignore what he just saw and look for something less unexplainable. He chided himself when he felt the cruiser speed up. "Come on, Tyler. Get your shit together. It was just a glimpse. It was either a couple of kids in costumes or a couple of deer. Hell, it could have even been my imagination because I let the other deputies get inside my head." As he rounded another lazy curve, he shook his head. No way those were deer. They were walking upright and looked human, except for the skin and the eyes on those snake-like stalks. Did I just witness something paranormal? He wanted to turn around, head back to the county road, get back to town, or at least go to Winona's Waffle Hut, which was open 24 hours, and sit for a few minutes in the fluorescent light with the night owls who frequented the diner. He needed to be around people. It would help shake off the creepiness that wriggled its fingers down his spine. But if he did that, then he was a coward, and he refused to let the tiniest glimpse of something that he really didn't understand and was probably completely explainable cause him to turn tail and run. He knew that your mind could play tricks on you, especially when there was already a suggestion in place. And the other deputies had done just that with their claims of secret paranormal encounters. He decided that what he had seen was in fact explainable, though he couldn't come up with an explanation at the moment. So he sat up straighter in his seat and boldly drove deeper into Dunwich Forest. The thin ribbon of black road wound through the countryside, and after a few minutes he was able to push the strange sight far back into his mind and turn his thoughts to his journey that had led him to becoming a deputy. When Tyler was little, he and his dad lived in a shitty little neighborhood in Atlanta. Denzel, his dad, liked to say that they lived on Misery Road, which Tyler hated hearing because it seemed so fatalistic. But that was his dad, always blaming someone else for his failures. In fact, Denzel blamed all their struggles on racism, which in fact had nothing to do with anyone oppressing them because they were black. It had everything to do with his dad's drinking. Denzel had a close relationship with whiskey, and that stopped him from holding down a job. And when Denzel would get fired because of his alcoholism, he would take it out on Tyler with verbal and physical abuse. Tyler had left home at 17 to escape that abuse. He'd gotten a job at a factory, was miserable within a month, and realized that he had started his own journey down Misery Road toward a destination of anger and disillusionment. Tyler worked that soul-shriveling job for 7 long years. Then, one night, driving home after a 16-hour-long double shift, he came upon a carjacking. 2 young thugs were pulling a woman out of her car. Without thinking, he swooped into action. He jumped out of his car, yelled at the thugs to leave the woman alone, and surprisingly, they took off, leaving the woman shaken but unharmed. It was at that moment he realized he wanted to be a cop. For the first time in his life, he felt that a bright future lay ahead of him. He was so jazzed that night that even after working such a long shift, he could not sleep. He had pulled up the Atlanta Police Academy website on his phone and applied that very night. But by the end of the week, he had received a rejection letter in the mail. But that didn't stop him. He now had a purpose in life. He knew that a big city like Atlanta had a long waiting list and that it had been a long shot at best. He felt that the best approach was to move to a small town and apply to whatever academy they offered there. So he had done his research and settled on Nevermore Hollows. He chose Nevermore because it was the exact opposite of a big city with quiet countryside, and the fact that Nevermore was a coastal town that set on a small bay was a huge perk for a city boy like him. So he quit his shitty factory job and took only a week's worth of clothes and his rusty Ford F-150 and moved to Nevermore. He got a job at Henriksen's Hardware and made an appointment to meet Sheriff Mosley. He had been surprised at how easy it was to get an audience with the sheriff. He chalked it up to the fact that things were just easier in a small town. Mosley had met him at Winona's Waffle Hut for coffee. When Mosley had asked Tyler what he needed, Tyler told the sheriff his story. He had finished by telling the sheriff that if he would just give him a chance, he'd be the best deputy on the force. And by the end of the conversation, Mosley was so impressed with the young man before him that he hired him. The lesson that Tyler had learned from that experience was that the only way to get ahead in life was to be bold, walk onto the field, step up to the plate, and swing. Tyler would always be loyal to the sheriff for giving him a chance, and part of that loyalty was not being chicken shit and patrolling the places that the bad guys were going to be, even if it's on a creepy-ass country road in the middle of the night. He rounded yet another lazy curve, and his headlights fell upon an older model green Honda. It was being driven very slowly, almost as if the driver was looking for a place to pull over. Tyler could only make out the shape of a driver. He knew it was wise to follow a bit longer to see if anyone else may be in the car, maybe scrunched down in the seat, who might peek up to see who was behind them. The Honda continued to move forward, no faster than 15 miles an hour. After a couple of minutes of following the car and not seeing any signs of other passengers, Tyler decided to flip on his red and blue lights and pull the car over. He wanted to inquire as to why they were out so late and driving so slowly. The driver of the Honda didn't pull over. They continued to drive slowly, almost at a crawl, down the dark road. Tyler blasted 2 short chirps of the siren. The car continued forward, not even a tap of the brakes. Tyler flipped on his high beams, yet the Honda crept ever forward. They were now deep into Dunwich Forest. The trees loomed over the road, their branches reaching out as if trying to grab the cars as they crept by. He could see the occasional eyeshine of animals hidden within the dark leaves. Surely opossums and such. But being a city boy for most of his life, he wasn't sure. Didn't one of the local hunters tell him that possums have red eyeshine? The shine that came from the eyes of the creatures in the trees was an eerie green. He'd never quite seen anything like it before. It was hard to tell, though, due to the flashing blue and red lights mixed with the pale white of the headlights. Then, one of the animals leaped from one branch on the left side of the road to another branch that clawed out from the right side. It was too fast to see much detail, but it looked simian, like a monkey. But it was hairless, with a longer snout and bat-like ears. As it soared from one branch to the other, it was washed in red, then blue, and back to red before it disappeared into the thick leaves. What the hell was that thing? He felt another shiver wriggle down his spine. He fought back the primordial fear that began to grow in the pit of his stomach. It had happened so fast he really couldn't tell what he had seen. He was letting the creepiness of the dark road and the fact that the guy in front of him wouldn't pull over get the best of his imagination. If the thing was hairless, it was probably some poor animal with the mange. Just a month or so back, Farmer Beck had shot a raccoon that was infected with the mange out next to his barn. The poor thing had looked alien, and Tyler remembered thinking that it was probably sick animals like the raccoon that people saw and thought were cryptids. Surely the creature he had just seen was another mange-infected animal of some sort. He turned his full attention back to the Honda. His mind ticked off the protocol for such a situation. He should call for backup. He keyed the mic and called it in, giving Carrie at dispatch his location and a description of the car and the tag number. "Sheriff Mosley is the closest to you and on his way," she replied, "but he's still 15 minutes out." "Roger that," Tyler said. He accessed the registration via his onboard computer. The Honda was registered to Brenda Dobbs, 32, 5'5", 130 pounds, lives in Akron, Ohio. She was reported missing when she didn't show up for work 2 nights ago. He looked up, trying to get a sense of whether or not it was her driving the Honda. Even though he could only make out a shadow of the driver, he could tell it wasn't her. The person driving the car was clearly taller, and from what he could tell of the shoulders, this person was heavy, bordering on obese. "Roger that," he replied. Suddenly, the driver tapped the brakes and the Honda rolled to a stop. He keyed the mic. 1081, he said, indicating that he'd finally gotten the driver to pull over and was exiting the cruiser. "Be safe," Carrie said. Tyler could hear the concern in her voice. She was his age, attractive with her long brown hair and big warm eyes and heart-stopping smile. She was one of those girls who loved being outdoors. She often wore a ball cap with a ponytail. She drove an old Chevy that used to belong to her granddad, and she could probably outshoot anyone on the force. She had flirted with him, making it clear she liked him, but he was just too shy to act on it. He hated that about himself. How could he be the best cop he could be when he was too afraid to ask a girl out who literally was making it easy? Roger, he replied and stepped out of the cruiser. He cautiously took a few steps toward the Honda, hand on the gun holstered at his hip. The beams from the cruiser's headlights made his shadow long and distorted on the ground before him. The slowly rotating lights caused him a bit of vertigo as the scene swirled blue and red. The complete darkness of the forest pressed in from all sides. The moment was as surreal as anything a horror writer could conjure. Suddenly, he felt an overwhelming oppression envelop him. His skin prickled, his fingers tingled, his stomach clenched. His mouth became dry. His mind was fuzzy. His heart raced. He shook his head to clear it, took a deep breath, thinking he was in the grip of fear. He stood straighter, forcing himself to man up. But the oppression intensified, as if resisting his attempt to take control of himself. It felt as if something, multiple things, were tugging at his sleeves, his pants, distracting him. No, that wasn't quite right. Not to distract him, to pull him closer to the Honda. He resisted, but he felt himself pulled forward anyway. A scared groan escaped him when he understood that this oppression was not his mind playing tricks on him. It was real. It was something dark, something twisted, something evil.
Let's take a quick break.
Out of the woods can the moon...
Moon Carter is a family fictional podcast, and I mean for the family. Parents, do you find it really hard to make it through your children's podcasts?
Then listen to Moon Carter and join me, Splot, and the gang on our magical adventures. Click all the links below or get it from where you get your podcast from. But if you need to be told that, then I worry about you. Splot. It's like drink water from where water's from.
Not,
what's that about?
Not helping. Moon Carter is a podcast. You like it?
He had to accept that this oppression he felt was some unseen entity. Was it a spirit? Something worse? What could be worse? Then he realized he really didn't want to know. He tried to turn, to run back to the cruiser, but the entity squeezed around him. He felt simultaneously pushed from behind and pulled along by his arms. He took a step, and his eyes were drawn to the trunk. For the first time, he noticed the blood. It was on the rear bumper, just under the keyhole. It was a thick smear that turned black when the blue light flashed, a glowing crimson when the red light flashed. He was forced forward again, two more steps. He was now just to the left and slightly behind the rear passenger door. He had enough of a view inside the car that he could see a hulking dark shape behind the wheel, and when he looked into the back seat, his mind reeled as he tried to make sense of what he saw. Something was leaning against the passenger window. He blinked, his heart pounding, his pulse sounding like a ringing gong in his ears. At first he couldn't make it out because it was too horrific to accept, but as he began to absorb the details, he couldn't deny what it was. There was a body in the back seat. The head was leaning against the window, tilted back, face up toward him. It was Brenda. Her eyes were missing. Blood streamed down her cheeks. Her dark curly hair was wild and matted with chunky gore. Her mouth was open. He could see the ragged stump of her tongue. The last inch or so was severed. No, not severed. More like she had bitten the tip of it off. Wet blood smeared the window. He could also see that it looked as if something had been chewing on her face. His stomach churned. Thick acid burned his throat. He felt the urge to vomit, but he pushed it deep. He needed to get control of himself. He tried to pull his gun from his holster, but he had no control of his hand. He could move his head. He turned his attention toward the driver, still just a massive shape, sitting completely still. He was pushed, pulled, two steps more until he stood beside the driver's window. The orange glow of the dash lights lit up the front seat, revealing an immense man sitting behind the wheel. He wasn't muscular. In fact, he was obese. He wore a blue t-shirt, the kind with a pocket over the left side of his chest above his heart. The shirt was dark with blood. The man kept his hands on the steering wheel. He stared forward into the dark road ahead, as if in deep thought. Even from this angle, Tyler could tell that he wore a twisted grin. The oppression that was in control of Tyler squeezed. His veins felt as if they were filled with ice water, and he shivered. With great effort, he resisted enough to take a step back from the gruesome scene and pulled his gun. He pointed it at the driver. Step out of the car, he said, his mouth dry, his throat tight, his voice thick. The man did not move. He continued to sit with his hands on the steering wheel, blank eyes staring forward, and that twisted grin. The night was completely still. There was no chirping of crickets or the siren call of cicadas, not even the faintest rustle of leaves. The only sound was his own ragged breathing and the hammering of his heart. Suddenly there was movement in the back seat. He looked. Brenda's body twitched. Tyler knew that she was dead. He could see that her throat had been chewed through. There was no way she could have survived. Her empty sockets turned toward him. Her mouth opened wider, and she let out a gurgling giggle. The entity that had control of him must also be using her. She lifted a hand. She was missing three of her fingers. They had been gnawed off. The only fingers left were her pointer finger and thumb. Still giggling, she placed her finger in the smear of blood on the window and drew a dripping smiley face. Tyler wanted to run back to the cruiser, speed away from this dead woman and the hulk of a man, but he was held in place, compelled to witness this macabre scene. He thought that maybe if he shot the man behind the wheel that the spell would break and he'd be free, but he couldn't pull the trigger. His fingers simply would not work. The thing controlling the woman laughed. It was deep and wicked.
Look at you. Shaking like a little baby.
What are you? Tyler said. The Brenda thing gurgled a laugh.
Unholy.
Tyler was so scared that his legs would have given out and he would have collapsed onto the back road had the entity not had control of him. The Brenda thing leaned its face forward and used the stump of its tongue to lick the blood smear. It groaned in ecstasy.
You're next.
Suddenly, the sharp wail of sirens wafted from far down the road. Backup was close, and the entity released its grip on him and Brenda. Her head fell against the window with a meaty thump. He dropped to his knees, taking in rapid breaths, shaking so badly that he dropped his weapon. The sirens grew louder, and he could see the glow of the lights just around the bend. He didn't want to be seen like this. He forced himself to grab his gun and pull himself up. He took a glance at the woman and saw that she was again lifeless. He leveled his gun at the driver and held his stance until backup arrived. Sheriff Mosley parked his SUV behind Tyler's cruiser and stepped out. Mosley was a man of average height, but he carried himself with a confidence that conveyed profound understanding about the world around him. In addition to his standard uniform shirt tucked into a pair of jeans, he wore combat boots and a cowboy hat. He pulled his weapon and strode up to Tyler. He was cool, calm, even as he took in the gruesome scene. He looked closely at Tyler, read the fear and shock on his face. What happened? I pulled him over and this is what I found, Tyler said. He didn't want to tell Mosley the full truth. He didn't want to sound as if the stress of such a gruesome scene had caused his mind to snap. I see it on your face, son, Mosley said. You saw something strange. I'll tell you now that you're not crazy. We can talk about it when we're done here. Now, mind your weapon while I open the door and cuff this guy. Tyler stepped back and allowed Mosley to open the driver's door. The man continued to sit as he had been, hands on the wheel, eyes staring at something distant, a satisfied smile on his blood-covered lips. Tyler had the idea that the man was in a catatonic state, but that wasn't exactly right. It was more like he was lost in his own thoughts. Do you think he killed her and has been eating her? Tyler said. Mosley shined a flashlight inside the front of the car, examining the man. There were chunks of flesh on the front of his shirt. The tip of Brenda's tongue lay in his lap. I think so. There's something in his shirt pocket. He put on a pair of latex gloves and gingerly pried open the shirt pocket. Tyler could see that Mosley grimaced. What is it? He asked. Shit, Mosley said. He plucked something from the pocket and held it up for Tyler to see. It's one of her eyes. Tyler fought the urge to vomit. Suddenly, the man shook his head, coming out of his reverie. He looked up at them, his chin covered in gore. That's mine. His voice carried a hint of petulance, as if he were perturbed that Mosley and Tyler were interfering with his evening. Mosley shook his head, completely disgusted. Who are you? Kevin, the man said. Kevin Belcher. Did you kill this woman? Kevin nodded. Yes. Why? Mosley said. Kevin looked at Mosley as if he were asking a stupid question. I was hungry. What's wrong with you? Mosley asked. Seemed like you were in a trance. Kevin shook his head, then looked longingly down at the gore on his shirt. Not a trance. Reminiscing. There's blood on the back bumper, Tyler said, scowling. What's in the trunk? Kevin's gruesome smile widened. Her dog. I had to kill it. Why? Tyler asked. She was walking it, Kevin explained. When I tried to grab her, it attacked me. It was self-defense. Mosley stepped back and motioned for Kevin to get out. Once Kevin had extricated his massive frame from the car, Mosley cuffed him and frisked him for weapons. Once he was satisfied that Kevin wouldn't be able to pull any surprises, Mosley popped the trunk and escorted him to the back of the car. Tyler lifted the lid and they looked upon the corpse of a German shepherd. It had a hunting knife protruding from its head. A small chunk of its throat had been cut free. What did you do to that poor animal? Tyler asked. Kevin stood looking down at the dog with a satisfied look on his face. I cut out its esophagus. Tyler shook his head in confusion. Why? Kevin shrugged. I've never tasted dog before. I think I prefer people. Mosley grabbed Kevin by the arm and led him back to his SUV. Tyler walked behind, trying to process everything that had happened to him on this terrible night. Before putting Kevin into the back seat, Mosley said, "Why did you do this, Kevin? The dog, Brenda, why did you do what you did to them?" Kevin considered his answer. He had the air about him of one who was trying to figure out how to explain a complex idea to a simpleton. After a moment, he said, "To be free." "What the hell does that mean?" Mosley grunted. Kevin glanced longingly at the Honda. "I've always wanted to kill, to taste the dead, and now I have. It felt so good." Mosley pushed Kevin into the back seat and slammed the door. He turned to Tyler, put a steadying hand on his shoulder. "I can see you're shaking, son. Pretty badly. You gonna be okay?" Tyler was reeling. He felt off balance, as if he were about to tilt over, as if the ground beneath his feet was not solid, but instead was only a thin membrane that would split under his weight and drop him in a free fall. But he could feel strength flowing from Mosley's firm hand. He felt the ground solidify, and his mind stopped its tilt-a-whirl spin, and his mind focused onto the present. I think I'm going to be okay, sir. Mosley nodded. I see it. You're going to come through, but with a new understanding of reality. That poor woman, Tyler said. Brenda. She was dead when I walked up. No way she could have been alive, but she moved. She spoke to me, and I couldn't move. Something had hold of me. It was playing with me. If you hadn't shown up, sir, I think it would have let him kill me and eat me, too. Mosley squeezed Tyler's shoulder. You're probably right, son. Tyler glanced at Kevin through the window. How could anyone do such a thing? Mosley sighed. He's a monster. That's what monsters do. Tyler scrunched up his face, confused. What do you mean? Not all monsters are paranormal, Mosley said. Some are simply wicked people who have given themselves over to depravity. But if he wasn't possessed by something, how do you explain that force, that entity that had control of me and of Brenda? Mosley had the answer. Wicked people attract wicked spirits. These woods are haunted, son, and something evil must have sensed him and took the opportunity. They heard the sound of an approaching vehicle. Headlights flared around the curve, and a blue and white VW bus pulled up behind the cruiser. It belonged to the coroner, Alyssa Hart. She refused to use a black coroner's wagon and instead used the bus. She was one of the small group of people, like Mosley and now Tyler, who knew the paranormal truth of Nevermore Hollows. She stepped out and walked up to them. She was 50, with red hair and freckles and a kind face. Mosley and Tyler brought her up to speed, and when they were done, she turned to Tyler and said, "I'm sorry, honey, that you had to go through this. But thank God Mosley got here before it got worse. Let's get this poor woman in a body bag and load it up. I'll get her back to the morgue and make sure I notify her family." Mosley had called for a tow truck. It arrived just after they finished getting the bodies of Brenda and the German Shepherd into the back of Alyssa's bus. It took only a few minutes to get the Honda hooked up, and they headed back toward town. "What's going to happen to him?" Tyler said, nodding at Kevin. "He will probably get a bleeding heart lawyer that will plead insanity and get him transferred to Morningstar," Mosley said, referring to Nevermore Hollow's only sanitarium. "They'll keep him medicated, and I'll make sure I keep an eye on him. I have a couple of deputies I trust who moonlight there as security." Tyler didn't like that answer. "But he's evil. He committed murder and cannibalism. A stay in Morningstar Sanitarium isn't justice." "You're right," Mosley said. "Our legal system is messed up." "He'll get justice, though, in the end," Alyssa said. "How so?" Tyler asked. Alyssa pushed a strand of red hair behind her ear. "Oh, I believe he'll be judged in the next life. And it will be hell." With that, she turned and got into her van and headed back to the county road. Mosley and Tyler followed in their cruisers. On the drive back, Tyler finally got control of his shaking, though he knew it would be a long time before he would ever be able to control the horrific images from possessing his thoughts. But one thing was certain. He was going to live his life to the fullest. And it was going to start by calling Carrie and asking her out to dinner.